Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vasanti. No, 17. Yes, 17. Excuse me. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Mito Bhajanti Esakya,
Mito Bhajanti Esakya,
Swarta Aikanto Dhyamahite,
Swarta
Dhyamato Dihe, Natatra Soredam Dharma, Swartatam Tadinanyata, Mito, mutually, means together, Bhajanti, reciprocate, ye, who, Sakya, friends, Swarta, for their own sake. Eka anta, exclusively. Udyamaha, whose endeavor. He, indeed. Te, they. Na, not. Tatra, therein. Soridam,
true friendship.
Dharma,
true religiosity.
Swarta,
what
does swarta mean? Swarta. Yes. Here, for their own benefit. Yes, basically selfishness. Swarta. Artam,
for the sake.
Tat,
that.
He,
indeed.
Na,
not.
Anyata,
otherwise.
So here's the translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. They have no true friendship, nor are they following the true principles of religion. Indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, so-called friends who show affection for each other
only to benefit themselves
are actually selfish.
They have no true friendship.
Nor are they following the true principles of religion.
Indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves,
they would not reciprocate. Now, what did you just hear? They would not reciprocate. You heard that, of course, it's the last thing you heard. Very good. What did you just hear? Yes. What about material friendship? Yes. But what exactly did you hear? Yes, a point from there.
I think true friendship is...
No, not a purport on it. Yes, there's something of true friendship. Not an explanation of it, okay. But what did you actually hear?
True friendship and reciprocation.
Yes.
Conditional
love, yes.
If somebody wants something from you, then they reciprocate with you. If they don't expect anything from you, they not reciprocate with you.
Yes, good. Yes. Yes, swarta. So, I'll read it one more time. Please listen carefully. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. Very simple, straightforward, honest, direct point. What was it?
So-called friendship is self-desire, or self-desire is selfish.
So-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. They have no true friendship, nor are they following the true principles of religion. Indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. Now, when you... Yes? What?
To summarize, you can say, a friend indeed is a friend indeed. If you are indeed, then only there is friendship. Otherwise, there is no friendship. There is no reciprocation.
But that's not what that saying means. It means just the opposite. That saying means a friend in need is a friend indeed, is when you need, then if your friend is helping you, then is it, huh?
What Lord Krishna is saying is
opposite. Yes, opposite. Just wait. Now Krishna is answering a question here. Om Jalatanga Syandalandala Sakaya Taksas Vilatanjana Tasma Sri Ravinama. Sri Chaitanya Manabhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutala Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapanantikam. Manchikaupatibhisapasanapasapatitanam Pabadeva Vaishnava. Krishna has asked, the gopis, the most beloved, deep devotee servants of Krishna, have asked Krishna a question. It is a trick question. Or, more accurately, we could say it is a trap question. Because they want to show... They are angry at Krishna and they want to chastise him. Now, there's so much that can be said just on this point. First of all, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sadaishwarya Puna. Savasya Chaham Ride Sanavisto Aham Savasya Prabhava Mataksava Pravatite Sutre Manigana Iva. Everything rests aham eva sam eva grey. There is nothing, practically speaking, in existence other than Krishna. And yet, his devotees, the greatest of devotees, are angry at him and wish to chastise him. Now, this is quite astounding. This reciprocation between the gopis and Krishna is practically speaking on a level that is unimaginable to us. The depth of their love is unimaginable. We cannot comprehend it any more than a poor man who possesses $5 can understand what it is like to be a billionaire or have $65 billion. We can comprehend what it's like to have maybe $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000, but billions and billions and billions, we cannot understand. It is on a different realm. Similarly, The gopis, their love for Krishna, it is so deep and so pure that everything that they do is simply a manifestation of their love. Even anger is a manifestation of their love. Pure love. With not a tinge of material desire or selfishness. What has happened prior is Krishna has disappeared from the rasa dance, the area of the rasa dance, the rasa mandala. And the gopis, rather than thinking, oh, well, then I should go home, or rather than thinking, well, then I'll find someone else, rather than thinking, what else is a typical thought that the materialistic mind has when we don't feel we've been given what we want? We can become deeply inimical to find another source of our pleasure. But the gopis were not like that. Practically, all they were thinking of are actually, as the last verse in the previous chapter said, from Tateya Puja. Yate sujata tararam bruhastaneshu vitashanai priyadadam hi kakeshu. The gopis, regardless of what it externally appears, they are only thinking of the pleasure of Krishna, and that is love. The gopis have been tested, not exactly tested. Did any of you ever seen in India? I've never seen one in the West, but in India, they have what is called a test stone, where you take gold and this black stone that almost looks like a shalagram sila, and you take gold and rub it against it. And if the gold, raise your hand if you've seen one of those. Just one. You have seen. You have just heard about it. But if you rub gold against it, if it is actually gold, it will turn a golden color. That a bit of the gold will rub off on the stone, and if it's not, it will be revealed. So Krishna has done something extreme with the gopis to reveal, not so much to test them, because he already knows the quality of the love of the gopis, of the purity of their love. But they has rubbed them with the test stone of his activities, so the true nature of their consciousness will be revealed, so that we will understand what love for Krishna actually is. And we can take, because so many people will say, oh yes, I'm a devotee, I love Krishna. But when we take that love and test it, our own love, my love, and test it on the stone, there is no gold that comes out. It is just swarta. Yes, I love Krishna, but as soon as Krishna doesn't do what I want, oh. But not in the mood of the gopis. Because the gopis, whatever it externally appears, they are simply interested in Krishna's pleasure, and they are simply thinking, how can I act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased? That is love. There is not the slightest tinge of swarta, of selfishness. So when Krishna returned The gopis were dealing with him after he disappeared from the rasa dance. And again, this is completely on the spiritual platform, on the eternal platform. It has nothing to do with the modes of material nature, the material world. With this is Golok Vrindavan. This is what it's like in the spiritual world. Because people, everyone suffers in the material world. It's unavoidable. And when they are tired of their suffering, if they are pious, artha gigyasa artha ti gyanicha varitasava chitovida bhajante mam jana sukriti. And if someone is sukriti, if he's pious, in the suffering he turns to Krishna, artha gigyasa artha ti. He either wants wealth, remove his distress, or curious about the absolute truth. He turns to Krishna. But this is not Shuddha Bhakti. This is not pure devotional service. This is a beginning, a first step to turning to Krishna. But the love of the gopis is on a completely transcendental level. Again, not the slightest tinge of self-interest. And this is what real love is. So when the gopis came, when Krishna came back, they began to speak to him in the ecstasy of their love for him. And they asked him this question that we heard in the 16th verse. Dear Achyuta, what does Achyuta mean?
Infallible.
So already they're saying, there is no fault on your part because you're transcendent. You're transcendental. Everything you do is for your own purpose, but it is very difficult for a conditioned soul to understand the purpose that Krishna is doing something. In the same way, a 3-year-old child or a 5-year-old child, when the parents do something, the child cannot understand. He doesn't have the conceptual ability. But the child isn't an anxiety because he trusts the caring nature of the parent. So similarly, when a devotee is fixed in devotion, he is achinta. There is no anxiety for him. And Vishwapurna Sukhayate, the whole material world, which is a place of misery, becomes full of happiness because they feel themselves always in the kind embrace of Krishna. This is the standard of pure devotion, in fact. This is the touchstone, the test stone of true devotion. That whatever happens to them, someone will see Krishna's mercy. That is devotee. So Krishna has left the gopis, so we understand what pure devotion is, because generally, whatever love we have in this world, it's hidden deep in the heart. Just like if we have in our possession a box full of jewels and diamonds and gold, we don't parade that around and show everyone. You don't take what you hold most valuable and just parade it and say, look what I have, look what I have, look what I have. No one does that. You keep it very well hidden. So similarly, what's in someone's heart on the deepest level, you don't just go and say it to everyone. You keep it very, very deeply hidden. The relationship, the deepest part of the relationship between the husband, the wife, the mother and the son, it comes out indirectly only. But there's a problem in this case. Because the gopis' love for Krishna is so deep and so well hidden that we will never understand it unless a circumstance is arranged that they will take out their jewels and display it. Then we will understand what is valuable. Then we will understand the standard, the highest standard of what prema bhakti is, prema pramato mahan, and we have to know. That's like if we don't know what gold really is. If we can't, we have no way of seeing what gold is. We will not be able to judge the wealth that we have or the wealth of someone who is saying, I have some gold. Would you like it? I have it. There's a story that Prabhupada told one time that he and his friend had devised a cheating method. And so one man wanders around in a crowd and says, I've lost my gold ring. Did you see it anywhere? I dropped it somewhere around here. Did you see my gold ring anywhere? And he goes around asking, did you see my gold ring anywhere? I dropped it right here just a few moments ago. And now I can't find it. It was very valuable, pure gold ring. Did you see it anywhere? I really need it back. I'm in so much anxiety. And then his friend walks around and says, with a fake ring, and says, I have this gold ring here. Very valuable. I'll give it a good price for it. Very cheap. And it's not a real gold ring at all, and they're working together. It's a cheating process. Do you understand? You understand the system? So, unless one knows what real gold is, if one is buying gold, one will lose out and become cheated. So how do you know? You have to find out what are the symptoms of real gold. So the problem is that unless we hear, unless we understand what actual pure love is, the actual mood of the residents in Vrindavan, we will never know what the goal is. We will never strive properly. We will become cheated. So Krishna arranges for several reasons, that being one of them, the gopis to speak. He disappears from their sight to test them. Not to test them exactly, but to extract. For us to be able to hear what the true nature of prema bhakti is on the highest level. But yet, after hearing that, the gopis are feeling some transcendental anger at how Krishna has treated them. And they ask the question, how about the nature of love and those who reciprocate? And they want to prove, their idea is to get Krishna to admit that he hasn't treated them properly. But of course, Krishna has. And of course, in their... And they accept whatever Krishna does because of the nature of their love. So in the previous verse they have said that which is better, Krishna? Why don't you tell us about those, the nature of lovers? Some people reciprocate their affection only with those who are affectionate to them. And then there are two others. Others show affection to even those who are indifferent. They, like the sun pours, or the rain clouds pour rain on the gardens as well as the ocean. Just they pour and pour. So some people show their love, and they just love and love and love, regardless if there's a reciprocation or not. And others just love and show affection when they're getting something back. And still others, the third example, is those who don't show any reciprocation at all, whether they're approached with love or not. So they ask Krishna to say, now which one is best? They're saying, into which category Are you falling into Krishna? We've given you everything. And look what you've done. So Krishna first starts speaking about the first of those who reciprocate equally. You love me, I love you. You love me 20%, I love you 20%. This, if you've ever done business, is what we call business friendship. You have so many friends in the business world, but as soon as there's no money to be made, you have no friends. And as soon as something, and if there's a question of you or him, what will the person choose? He will choose himself. If it's you or me, I choose myself. If someone has to lose on this business deal, it is not going to be me. But yet, this is the nature of business friendship. And this is what Krishna, his first response, is that he says, this so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. That is not true friendship. That is not true love. That is not devotion. So when Krishna, or when we see the love of the gopis, how do we feel when we hear this, that Krishna says so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish? They have no true friendship, nor are they following the true principles of religion. Not only are they friends, they don't know what dharma actually is. They don't know the proper way to advance. They're not friends, they are not religious. Because we see in friendship, this is what takes place usually. Instead of a friend in need is a friend indeed, it's more you scratch my back and I'll scratch your back. And if you don't scratch my back, don't think I'm going to scratch your back. And of course, where does that example come from? Huh? If you live in Vrindavan, you see them always, well, the monkeys, they're always scratching each other's back. It's the way of the pull out the little fleas or whatever they have there. Have you seen that? Have you seen that? Have you ever seen monkeys pulling out each other's fleas? Where? In the zoo. Yes. In Vrindavan, you see it everywhere. The monkeys are there pulling each other. That's not love. That's the business dealing. So there are two principles. It's not friendship. It's so-called friendship. It's not true principles of religion. And indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. This is not the standard of the spiritual world. The purport here is one sentence only. The Lord here reminds the gopis that in pure loving friendship, there is no sense of selfish interest, but rather only in one's love for one's, and only love for one's friend. Now, when you hear this standard of love and friendship and true religion, what do you think? What thoughts go through your mind? Do you think about all your friends and how that some have cheated you, some have not acted properly to you in relationship? Do you think about that? And all the people who did wrong to you? Or do you think about yourself and your own hypocrisy? So that, I'm not asking for a show of hands on that one, but we should understand that this is the purpose why, or one of the purposes, because when Krishna does something, he does something, he does many things, he accomplishes many things with his one act. And later on at the end of the chapter, he will say his deepest reason for disappearing from the gopis. But at this point, speaking about, he's holding up the standard of what devotion actually is. By holding up, by making a circumstance where the gopis will take out their heart, their love, and display it so we can see what purity actually is. And then we can look at our own consciousness and understand why we are not in Goloka Vrindavan. And understand how much further one has to go if one actually wants to become a true devotee. This is the standard of Krishna consciousness. Arajyo Bhagavan Vrijesha Tanayo Tantamam Vrindavanam Ramyaka Chiru Pasana Vraja Vadubhya Na. Does anyone know? So Mahaprabhu himself said the best of places is Sri Vrindavan Dham, because in Vrindavan Dham the best of the devotees live there. And Vrindavan Dham has a special sweetness and a special mood that facilitates and special facilities that facilitate the pleasure of Krishna and the ecstasy of Krishna's devotees. And of all the devotees, no one worships Krishna better than the Braja Gopis. So the nature of that devotion is being held up here. So we can see that it is unflinching. It is pure. What does unflinching mean? Unchanging. No matter what happens, it is completely fixed. If the universe would collapse, it remains fixed. If this happens, it remains fixed. If Krishna Sreshava Pararitam Panastumam, if Krishna handles them so roughly by their embrace, it remains fixed. Fixed on what? On Krishna's pleasure. Not on Krishna, but on Krishna's pleasure. The goal of Krishna consciousness is not Krishna. It's Krishna prema. It's love for Krishna. It's not trying to attain Krishna as if he's mine in that sense. It's love for Krishna, because by love for Krishna, one will get Krishna. This is what we'll find out at the end of this chapter, where Krishna says, with the gopis, Naparye hum. I cannot even reciprocate with your love, because it is 24 carat. There is not a trait. In fact, it is better than 24, a million times better than 24 carat, because 24 carat gold is pure gold. But you cannot have pure gold in this world. Do you know that? There's no such thing as 100% pure gold in this world, because in this world there is nothing that is 100% pure, because everything is tinged by impurity. Impurity means, in this case, false ego, ahankar, swartha, selfishness, me, 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 me. That is the very nature of being in the material world. It is contaminated by false ego, a false sense that it is me who is to be pleased. But life, my dear boys and girls, life is not meant for pleasing me. Life is meant for pleasing God, for pleasing Krishna. This is the the news, the good news, that everyone really should learn. Life is not meant for pleasing me. And life is difficult. And life is going to end in this body. This is the hard facts of life. Life is not meant for pleasing me. And everyone is so disappointed in this world because why? We're thinking that life is meant for pleasing me, and we think ourselves victims of this world always, but life is not meant for pleasing me. It's meant for pleasing Krishna. If you don't believe me, and if you don't believe the Bhagavatam, and if we don't believe the elders of this world, we can go and try to be pleased. And we'll find out that we'll end up being servants nevertheless. Have to serve. You have to serve. Life is not about being served. The people who are, because that's why everyone, the people who are really upwardly mobile and want their, who are powerful in this world, who know how to exploit this world, they also end up only being servants. Only servant. That's all we can ever become, is servants, because that is our intrinsic nature. Water can only, or sugar can only be sweet. You don't find salty sugar. Because it's dharma. Dharma means the essential nature of an object. So jivera sarup. Hoy, Krishna Nityadas, our dharma, our essential nature is that we are servants, we are servants, we are servants of Krishna. This is very difficult to understand, and still more difficult to accept, and still more difficult to act in that way, still more difficult to want to even act in that way, when things are at their best. And still more, still more difficult to want to act in that way when things are difficult. It's so easy to sit up here and give classes so everyone should be a servant of Krishna, and no matter what happens, it becomes fixed. But when difficulty comes, such a deep tendency there is to just think about me. Instead of, what will please Krishna? And that consciousness, that surrendered nishtha consciousness, is the very beginning of the price of being Golok Vrindavan. Therefore, Narottama Das Thakur says that the love of the residents of Vrindavan is like gold purified in 100 flames. You take that gold and you melt it down and you put it in the crucible. That's what that container is called. And you melt it down and some impurities will come to the top, and you take off those impurities and you melt it down again, and some more impurities will come to the top, and you take those off and you melt it down again. You make it molten gold. And then you take off some more impurities hundreds of times. And that process is called sadhana bhakti. You try to become a devotee, and then you melt down, and all the impurities come to consciousness, your limitations, your impurities, your selfishness, anatta, all the unwanted things that are in the consciousness become to the surface. The aparads, the offensive mentality comes out, the material attachments, asatrishna, material desires, they come, and that's the time to scrape them off. And then you think, good, Now I'm pure, all the impurities are gotten rid of, and then you go through a little more of devotional life, melt down again, become molten, and some more become visible, and you think it's never going to end. Like Prabhupada said, it's like cleaning coal. And how many times do you have to clean coal before? And it seems, that's what it seems like. If you get rid of all the dirt from the coal, there's nothing left. But when we were young, we used to watch on television, we used to watch Superman. And he used to take a piece of coal and go, he used to watch that. And he'd squeeze it and put it under like thousands of years worth of pressure. And then he'd open his hand and there would be a sparkling diamond. No, it would be a diamond. Because it takes that. It takes that. Because 100 times the gold has to be purified. Because to achieve the highest thing, one has to pay the greatest price. And the price is purity. Not even 99% or 99.9% means purity, means purity. Unalloyed devotional service. Nothing added. Jnana karma anavrita anakulena krishna anashilanam. Okay, Krishna, whatever you wish to do with me, okay. So these verses, they really do, they by the gopis opening up their heart, it gives us an opportunity to look in the mirror and see what's actually there. We can, all day long, we can think ourselves so wonderful, but then, and so beautiful in our own mind, and then we look in the mirror and go, who's that horrible person looking back at me? We turn the mirror around or something. Someone should do that. They should make a virtual mirror that you can program in anything you want to see when you look in the mirror. It would be a good idea. People would like that, yes? A beautiful person with, okay, look in the mirror and see that. Yes? What do you think? Think it will sell? But devotees shouldn't buy that kind of a mirror. I'll read the verse again, and then we'll call for comments and questions. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. They have no true friendship. Nor are they following the true principles of religion. Indeed, if they did not expect benefit from themselves, they would not reciprocate business friendship. So Krishna is saying no. He's checking off the first one. That one's not best. They're asking about him, of course. And he's saying, no, that one's not best. They've asked indirectly, so he's answering indirectly. Okay, thank you very much. If there's any questions or comments? Yes?
This verse, this chapter is starting where Krishna reappears into the arena. But in the previous verse, we saw the chapter, we saw the gopis praying intensely for Krishna. So what are the words which show really the intensity of their love in the previous chapter?
Every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. But is there not prayer, not the desire to see Krishna back, which is called more like a lalasama prayer?
But that, it's purity. Everything that the gopis do is for Krishna. It is for Krishna's pleasure. This is described, there's an explanation of this in the fourth chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila. When the gopis comb their hair, when they dress themselves, when they put on their kajal, it appears, if we have a materialistic mind, they're acting just like any other lady who's dressing themselves to go out. But regardless of what it looks like, the gopis only have one thought, because all we can see, we're only seeing our own mind. So I start thinking, oh, when I do that, I know what I'm thinking. I want everyone to think how beautiful I look. So the gopis must be thinking that too. But all I'm seeing is my own mind. So Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains the mood of the gopis, or all the residents of Vrindavan, as such, they would die 1,000 times if they could save Krishna the slightest bit of inconvenience, a drop of perspiration appearing on his forehead. They would die 1,000 times to protect Krishna. So if one has the right consciousness or reads the words of the Acharyas, it all becomes very transparent what the gopis' mood is. And of course the last verse in that chapter, perhaps it's the most obvious. Oh dearly beloved, your lotus feet are so soft, Krishna is wandering around, that we place them gently on our breasts, fearing that your feet will be hurt. Our life rests only in you. Our minds, therefore, are filled with an anxiety that your tender feet might be wounded by pebbles as you roam about on the forest path. That's all they're thinking about, is that Krishna's lotus feet, which are so soft and tender and reddish in you, may feel some pain if he steps upon a thorn or even a sharp ankur, a seedling, sprout, or something. They're only concerned with Krishna. There's a famous little story how Krishna had a headache. You know that story? Krishna had a headache. So Narada Muni came and said, how can we remove your headache, dear Lord? And he said, if I can get the dust of the lotus feet of my devotees and place that upon my head, then my headache will be gone instantaneously. So Narada Muni went around. First he found some exalted brahmanas and said, please, Krishna has a headache. Oh no, this is terrible. It's terrible. How can we help? He said that if his devotees will give the dust of their lotus feet, no, this is the Lord. How can we do that? What an offense that will be to take our feet and place it on the dust on place. We can't do that. What will be the result of that? That's a hellish thing to do. So one by one, they went to one group of devotees. Narada Muni went to one group of devotees and another group of devotees. No, if we do that, we'll do anything for Krishna. But no, we can't do that. What an aparad, what an offense. We'll go to hell for that. And then finally, Narada Muni went to the gopis. Krishna has a headache. Oh, no. What can we do? He said that if his devotees give the dust of their lotus feet, then his headache will go away. And they replied, said, yes, immediately. You can take the dust from our feet and place it on Krishna's head. And Narada Muni was astounded. Because what devotee would do that? And he said, aren't you afraid of offense? Or going to hell for this? And they said, maybe we'll go to hell. But if it will remove Krishna's headache, we don't care at all. So that's the mood of the gopis. It's Krishna, 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 Krishna. Only what's suitable for Krishna? What will please Krishna? How they thought about nothing other than Krishna and how to please him. No other thought could enter their mind. That is love for Krishna. So you want to go to Vrindavan? That's how to go. Develop that. Follow in the loving footsteps of the Vrajavasis, Vrajagopis, then you'll be in Vrindavan. Nothing but Krishna. Nothing but Krishna's pleasure. Is that a high price? It's everything. And when you consider that and examine your heart, what will you see? That you have to find out. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Just following up from Sishvesh's question, we see that, I think it's verse 8 or 9 of the Bhagavad Gita, that they're actually quite popular verses. Is there a specific reason why a lot of those choose to chant those verses?
Tavakatamritam, or this one? or the Gopi Gita?
Well, particularly that one verse is even quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita by Maharaj Pataparudra.
When Maharaj Pataparudra went to, this is an amazing pastime actually, how when Maharaj Prataparudra, he wanted to see Mahaprabhu. He wanted to have his darshan, but Mahaprabhu wouldn't see him because he was a king, because it's very dangerous for someone in the renounced order to associate with a vishayi, a person whose consciousness is a person who is dealing so intimately with the world of matter, like a king. Very dangerous. Why is it dangerous? Why is it dangerous? Huh?
You can get contaminated.
Yeah, what does that mean? Yes, exactly, the desire. Oh, look what the king can do. He claps his hand and the dancing girls come out. You know, his enemies are over. If someone doesn't like him or something, he doesn't like someone, he claps his hand and the army comes out and cuts off his head. What a wonderful life. These kind of desires can enter the heart because association. So Maharaj Prataparudra, we couldn't see Mahaprabhu. Did you read that the story in Chaitanya Bhagavat? Oh yeah, so when Mahaprabhu was pleased with him, because even though he was the king, he swept in front of Lord Jagannath, he decided to show him his mercy. So during Rath Yatra, he saw Mahaprabhu dancing in ecstasy, which was his desire, and he saw, it's very, very difficult to explain what he saw, because just what would it be like to have a jet plane engine on your bicycle? So prema bhakti erupting in the heart of a devotee, and this is what Mahaprabhu was acting as if, was just like that. His body would practically fall apart, and foam would come from his mouth, like the Ganga would pour from his eyes, mucus would pour from his body. And Maharaj Prataparudra saw the eruptions of prema, and he thought it was the most wonderful thing. But he looked at it and also thought, oh, how is this possible that this is the Supreme Personality of God, and mucus is coming from his mouth, foam is coming. It was intense, completely intense. So even though he thought it was the most wonderful thing, a doubt entered his heart. So that night he went home and he took rest and he had a dream. And in the dream there was Lord Jagannath, who was his worshipable deity, Yudhishthira. And he saw Lord Jagannath and he was offering prayers to Lord Jagannath and offering flowers and this and that. And suddenly Lord Jagannath's transcendental body went into ecstasy and mucus began coming out of his mouth and foam, or his nose and foam. And Prataparujaraj, because it was his worshipable deity, he went forward to help out of his love. And Lord Jagannath said to him, "Don't touch me. You are a great king and this is all very dirty. You're a great king and from a family of a great king, you'll just get contaminated." And because he was such an exalted devotee, he understood. And then immediately Lord Jagannath turned into Mahaprabhu in his dream. And he said, "You had a doubt in your mind when you saw this." Mm-hmm. And then he immediately understood and he woke up in complete ecstasy. In complete ecstasy, understanding truly the nature of Mahaprabhu's ecstatic dancing. So the next day was the day after the Rath Yatra. And this is what's partially described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya made an arrangement that he could see Mahaprabhu, who was resting in the Jagannath Ballava gardens the day after Rath Yatra. So he began to say some verses. So he changed, he took off his kingly dress, and understanding who Mahaprabhu was, he took off his kingly dress and he dressed it just like a poor, dressed as a poor beggar, a Vaishnava mendicant, and he went before Mahaprabhu, who was lying on the ground in ecstasy, and he began reciting the verses of the Gopi Gita. Now why, which is your question, that was part of the question, is because these verses show the heart of the gopis. And this was Mahaprabhu's mood. It shows separation. And therefore these verses in the 31st chapter are considered, practically speaking, the height of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the height of the Vaishnava Dharma. Because the highest devotees, the Braja Gopis, Krishna has arranged a circumstance where they take out their heart and show it. So if you have a heart that resonates with this heart, just like the guitar, or if you hit a tuning fork, you know, the proper string, the proper note resonates. Sympathetic vibration is called. So if your heart is pure enough and on that level, your heart resonates and you experience the ecstasy that they experience. So that chapter is considered the highest chapter in the Bhagavatam. That specific chapter. That, and you could also say the Brahma Gita, the Uddhava, when Uddhava is with them, and Kurukshetra. There's a few different sections that are considered the highest. When Akura takes Krishna, the words of the gopis then. But this chapter specifically, a whole chapter, is considered the highest exhibition of ecstatic vraha bhav, love and separation. So therefore the devotees, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, it's very very dear to them, which is why they sing it. But and what happened was, so Prataparudra sang these verses for the pleasure of Mahaprabhu, not for his pleasure, but because Mahaprabhu's heart was syncopated, it vibrated, resonated with this, because this was exactly his mood, and therefore it gave him so much pleasure. He, in ecstasy, he knowing who he was, of course, he embraced Prataparudra. He only got up to that Tavakatam Mitam verse, and then Mahaprabhu, his ecstasy over flooded, and He didn't get even further. And then in Caitanya Bhagavat, it describes further the prayers of Pratyabhurja Maharaj after that, which was so wonderful. Yes?
So, is it because I heard it explained that it was that particular verse which was the impetus for Mahaprabhu embracing, it's just that Mahaprabhu's ecstasy was building. And
yeah, no, all the verses. That verse itself has different meanings. No, not that specific verse. There was a chastisement for Krishna, an indirect chastisement in that verse, the opposite of what it appears to. Because Sanskrit is such a language, everything can have multiple meanings. On one it says the opposite of what it appears to say. No, it wasn't that specific verse, but it was building. And he said, you're the most munificent because you're giving this, you're pouring this Krishna Katha into my ear. That makes you the most munificent. Because it reacted, the love of the gopis, the heart, because what's in the heart, when it comes out the mouth in a pure way, in this case, it entered the ear, came out of the gopis' heart, through their mouths, into the ear of Mahaprabhu and into his heart. And their hearts were one. And it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Yes. Hearts were one, and it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Yes. Hearts were one, and it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Yes. Hearts were one, and it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Yes. Hearts were one, and it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Yes. Hearts were one, and it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Hearts were one. And it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Hearts were one. And it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Hearts were one. And it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Hearts were one. And it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late. Hearts were one. And it caused such ecstasy because he was in the mood of separation from in Kurukshetra. He was in the mood of the Rath Yatra, of bringing them back, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan at that time. So it perfectly fit into his ecstasy. Anything else you'd like to add? And then we should end because it's already late.